Welcome. I'm Carol Sanford. I am the host of the Regenerative Business Podcast. We share stories from the business world of companies that are in pursuit of what we call the first principles of life. That means that they're principles that help us understand how living systems work. There are seven of them. I'd like to give you just a quick overview of those so as you listen to this interview that's coming up, you would quickly be able to grasp which thing they're speaking about, even though we may not ask them directly. The first of the principles is working from the perspective of understanding a whole rather than parts. So, for example, someone working regeneratively is working with a whole child, a whole family, a whole community, or a whole ecosystem, rather than segmenting it into parts and pieces. The second principle is that you're working from the development of potential of a specific real individual or system, rather than working from ideals and problems. Well, what ideals means is that you have a template and you layer it on top of everything. It tends to objectify it and say, you ought to be like this, rather than looking at potential, which is where something really comes to life. One of the ways you'll know is if you're working with the template of ideals is you probably have to certify something or be certified, or you have standards you have to meet in order to be a member. So what you want to be doing is working from potential, which is really working from principles as we are here, or aims. The third principle is you're considering systems reciprocity rather than transactional exchange. In order for something to be vital, viable, and evolving and have the capacity to do that, it needs to be seen as a part of something that the whole is moving at the same time. We tend to fall into our world thinking about the exchanges we make, and we become extractive because we're looking for a quid pro quo. The fourth principle is working from the essence, the singularity, you might even call it the individuatedness of a living entity. What you see there is something that is never seen anywhere else. Doing the opposite means that we categorize it into one of four types, or one of seven types, or one of nine types. The minute we do that, we no longer are connected with the essence and the individuation of a living entity, and we've made it into a commodity, which can be found among a large number of similar things. The fifth principle is working and understanding living systems as nested inside one another. That's whether you're talking about a living system being a place or a person or some other dimension. Humans, for example, are nested inside of families and inside of communities and then inside of an ecosystem. In order to understand that, it helps us get over our flatland view of where everything is separate, and we have to bring ourselves back to that we all exist in something that permaculture might call a guild. The sixth principle is we all intervene and we all have roles to play. But the important thing we do is we learn to intervene nodally. Nodally is contrasted to a shotgun effect, which many sustainability programs have, or many other programs which are not even about doing good, where you get long lists and you work on trying to make sure you cover all the bases. Nodally, on the other hand, looks at where the high potential intersections run together. It's an acupuncture idea. If you want to understand this, you think of a child, either yourself as a child or your own children, and you'd say, the most nodal place to be intervening with a child is where they have enthusiasm, passion, it intersects with their interest, and it's something they seem to be drawn to. If you wanted to teach them something, starting there might be an example of a node. The seventh principle is more related to people, although it does span out to all living systems. And it means we work on development of human beings rather than manipulation, or of animals, or of other systems. Now, what that means is we're actually working on building capacity of human beings rather than trying to maneuver them into how we want them to behave from the outside based on incentives, rewards, recognition, or just anything that would seem sometimes to force them into the path that we want to go. Developmental way of working helps people become self-directed, self-determining, and even greater tomorrow than they are today. You're going to hear each of the stories which come out of the interview as representing a pursuit of one of these, and most of the time, more than one. They are not the same thing as pursuing sustainability, doing good, fair trade, or other examples of what mostly are ideals that are drawn. Not that those are bad things. They have their utility, but they don't fit the regenerative paradigm. So listen. Listen for how the particular business that's being interviewed and the story they're telling is moving in pursuit of the principles. You'll hear them either having intention toward them, endeavors where they've put some things in place, results from the new way of working that is creating something greater, and effects where it's beginning to ripple out in time. So today, as you listen to the interview that we have of a small business, do your own assessment. Which of these are they pursuing? Have they done it all the way to the level of producing significant effects? And in some places, have they only expressed their intention? We think everything counts.
Well, good morning, Fabio, or good evening for you. Would you please introduce yourself to my listeners and to tell them about your company and what its purpose is and what it produces?
Yes, good evening. Good morning to you, Carol. And thank you for inviting me to this interview. My name is Fabio Vieira, and I'm representing the company Manence TFS, which is based off Italy. And we are a consulting engineering company for the built environment.
And what would you say is the primary thing that differentiates you or you seek to bring out into the world in a way that expresses who you are uniquely?
Yes, the company was born about, well, it has my age. So it was born 45 years ago. And the founder had an express interest of really transforming the way buildings were designed. At that time in Italy, the architect would just bring the design almost finished on the table of the consultant engineers, and we would have to bolt on the systems that we designed, like air conditioning or electric. And his idea was to actually introduce a different, more integrative design approach for which all the systems would be designed at the same time, so that all issues would be taken care of and understood since the very early stages of design. And really that essence and that innovative thinking, the integrated design approach has developed as technology and also as our own learning and the overall built environment and design community developed to a more holistic, more integrative, and even hopefully more regenerative approach as we're doing it nowadays, where sustainability issues in particular have become a more mainstream aspect and understood particularly by also clients, which are the ones that most of the times are, you know, the one either driving or not driving these issues.
Okay. So one of the first principles of regeneration is the idea that you are very much aware of the value-adding process you affect downstream. So you do something, and you could do it really well by your definition. You could even do it really well by your customer's agreement. But your customers then have to use it. They have to use that building. They have to use that design to create their contribution in the world. Being regenerative means we're making it possible for them to regenerate and create something extraordinary in the world. People may never know we were there. They may never know your company, although they may tell the stories. But what you're measuring is the effect of your customers doing something in the world. Can you tell us any stories about how you pay attention to that?
Well, I can bring one example, which we've been working with Renzo Piano, the architect, for more than 30 years. We've done most of his projects in Italy. And one recent project we did was the redevelopment of a previous industrial site, quite large, so it's a mixed-use development. And inside of this development, we also put a natural science museum, which is in Trento, which is a beautiful area around the Alps, so in the mountains. And this area, particularly the essence of this area, is really the connection with nature. You know, the mountain people, they've always connected with either farming or mountains or nature. And putting a science museum there was very interesting. And the purpose of the client really was ensuring that this development, apart from regenerating an old industrial site, which is in itself a regenerative process, it wanted to create the small museums to educate children in a much more tangible way about the wildlife and the nature of mountains and the interaction and the effect of people with keeping and maintaining or even conserving this environment. So Rentzer was adamant that when we designed, we kept this consciousness in mind, that this final purpose for which the customer, I mean, our client wanted a museum, but in the end, the museum would serve evidentially as educational means, not only to the children, but also to their parents, because, you know, children will bring them up, but really also the target is teaching now what is happening with climate change, how glaciers are diminishing and all of that. And Renzo was adamant that the building itself, and not only its content, would be an educational tool for all the visitors and all the community around this building. So this was always put in our design. We had integrated design sessions where this larger thinking and the thinking of the future users and their families and the benefits of the habit in the community was always kept in mind throughout the design process.
And what do you know about the effect that intention has had? Do you know anything that's happened with children or families as a result of being
here? Yes, I think it's the most successful museum ever, in the sense that has been very well promoted. Schools are fully booking the museum throughout the week, so it's almost impossible to go there as a private person during the week. They've had enormous interest, and they've been doing very well. And also being this in the route, which is a major route in Europe from Germany to southern Italy, Verona has always been strategic for that position. It has an incredible amount of tourists just bypassing and coming into Italy from northern Europe, Germany, Holland, and other countries. They're actually stopping to see this museum because it has it's actually visible for the motorway. It's a beautiful design building. And it's really been a very successful in terms of number of visitors, but also very successful in the feedback. They have workshop for children. They take children to sleep over there. They only also teach new science, so that the new technologies. They have temporary exhibitions, so they've been very good at keeping that building live. And the feedback is fantastic. The client, I mean, the museum is very, very happy. And the whole region by that, because they have really put Trent on the map of tourism that was not necessarily there as a city.
Now I know the second place I have to go visit when I come back to Italy.
Yes, yes. I can take you there. We can have a visit.
That would be wonderful, and a glass of red wine. The second question I have is related to the second principle. One of the things that regeneration speaks to is being very present with each entity, unique and in and of itself, each place, unique and in and of itself, having its own essence, its own potential. The thing that we're working with when we say that is trying to overcome the generic ideals that get set and then layered on top of everything as though there was one set of generic ideals. I know that you as a business pay a lot of attention to the potential of what's in front of you. I could hear it in that story, but I'm wondering if there are other stories that help us see how you look at this entity I'm looking at, where it is now, how it fits in this place, and how you design for that. Separate story, if you could.
Yes. Yeah, in a different building. This was a again a previously industrial site which the client owned, and it was part of its own history. And the client really only wanted a new building, right? A new head office for the. It's a quite a large Italian corporation, a multinational one, which are not many, and they really did not have a clear view apart from a building. And we engaged together with the architect a very demanding process in which, by which we educated the client from the beginning how particular sustainability features had to be introduced for the benefit of its own people. They would go and occupy this building, but for a benefit, of course, as a sustainability as a whole. And we went from, to make a big story short, the process lasted about 4 years, and we went from a brief that had basically no sustainability features inside a building, from wanting a LEED silver building, to then designing a LEED platinum building, to actually achieve a net zero energy building. And now we're also talking about, the clients is so engaged now, they's actually asking us to get into the operations of the building and see how we can improve that, that the processes that they have or they don't have so much in this case, and how we can help them also interact with its own people that they will go and occupy the building to really transform, as they have transformed their way of thinking through the evolution of this design process, how can we transform the thinking of their own people in terms of sustainability and the use of the building, and to the benefit of their own health and well-being.
So one of the things that I experience is that many sustainability processes, which have value, are very much generic ideals, and they are layered. What you check off a list, you get points for each of them, but you don't become present fully with what's there, what context it's in, who's going to be living in it. And it doesn't become regenerative until it's a dynamic living process. And what I hear is that you moved even fair trade, all of those things have great intentions, but they make it generic and you can lose what is present. What you were doing in this one, and maybe there are other examples of where you can really connect with the people who are going to use the building, the community it's going to exist in, and you're really designing and inventing for that. And part of that comes from being able to see the essence of what's there. And it sounds like you worked with that client until you had them go beyond the generic ideals of good intentions into something more alive. Are there other stories like that?
Yeah, I have a even more really exemplary case that we had in Italy that at the moment is being visited and cited throughout the country as really an exemplary client that since the very beginning of the choice they made in terms of a new or their head office, this is, I think I can name it because they're quite happy about it, the Lavazza Coffee headquarters in Turin.
Yes, yes.
And they're a very different client. They have sustainability very well clear in mind and their own objectives. So even from the beginning and the choice of the site for the new building, they purposely went and picked an existing, in a previously industrial site. This was an electrical power plant in a poor neighborhood of Turin, you know, certainly not as fancy as you would imagine they would place their own headquarters, with the purpose of transforming the site, but also being a catalyst for transforming the neighborhood. Ah. And they're very, very conscious of their role within the city. Lavazza has been there forever. We're talking about a century-old firm that has always had a very, very tight and close relationship with the city of Turin. And they were very conscious about this. And they took the harder route of going onto the existing site instead of choosing a new site. They examined very much the impact of their people of going onto the site, but they also wanted to develop this wider site that they did not need for themselves specifically, for which they designed and created another museum next to it on the same site. And also they interacted with other stakeholders, for which they're doing a new university of design there at the same site. And this was obviously very well seen by the municipality, which were very keen to interact with Lavazza. But the thing that really made very interesting, is there, because of their essence of being really bound to the city, they had they were very conscious about communicating what they were doing, the reasons why they were doing. And this communication went beyond any normal communication, at least that we used to in our country, by developing a single website to communicate on a continuous basis the reasoning and the progress of the building. They had visits from school children, from school onto the site, to teach them what it meant building a new building and what it meant all the sustainability features that they were introducing in their building. They also had a very engaging relationship with their own employees, for which they involved them and engaged them in understanding what this new building was all about, what were the health and well-being features that were being put for their benefit and for the benefit of the environment. And this really is taken as a case. They engaged in a very, very frequent process of attending conferences. They were thinking this was also the first LEED building was being pursued in Turin. So there was a lot of interest around this, and they really were champions for sustainability, using LEED as a tool, of course, but certainly going beyond what the as you said, the point exercise, and very, very conscious about what were the contents that they were pursuing. In a very transformative process for the municipality, so that with the importance they had, the municipality has started to recognize the tax incentives for sustainability features as a whole, instead of they were doing prior to them as just simply incentivizing specific technologies. And that was also transformative for the municipality.
That's great. A third principle, which I believe that you represent in many of the things you're doing, is what we call mutual reciprocity, because we don't have a great and better word for it. I think there is a root word that's Latin, so maybe there is one in Italian, which means that when you do something, it has effect in many, many ways, and it's not transactional. It's not I'm doing something for you. It's that I know that things, you know, the whole idea of pay it forward, and things have effects that are way beyond what we can see, and are kind of a mutual exchange. It's like when I raise my children, well, the universe gets something. I may never get anything back, but I probably will. But you understand what I mean. This idea of this mutual reciprocity is a part of regeneration. It's how living systems works. And again, I can already hear that a little bit in the last two that you've described, being very aware of being in a community. Maybe there are other stories or ways you could extend those stories that help us see why it's not transactional, and why you're not just transactional.
Yeah, we're always we're very conscious that being the largest single specialty consulting engineering company for mechanical and electrical design, in particular in sustainability consultancy, we very much feel the leadership role that we have towards our community. Our community means all the built environment community, but not only that, because of what we were saying earlier about what our buildings then enable in terms of transformative behavior on their own users. But in a more direct way, we're very conscious that we try to promote this what we believe to be an innovative thinking and a connection and regenerative approach through our volunteering in the Green Building Council Italia, for example. We were amongst the founders of the Green Building Council Italia. We put professionals as volunteers to produce the rating systems in Italy, which is the only rating system which is recognized also by the U.S. Green Building Council around the world. And we're very conscious of promoting through conferences our thinking, both in client conferences, mostly towards architecture, which is, I think, is really architects are the one that are more enablers if they acquire and share our belief. And we do a lot of voluntary activity also for our own association, that which is the equivalent to ASHRAE in the U.S. And we also try to exchange a lot with our clients. We really make caring before profit, and this caring is really to try and get them to change the way they think about their own buildings. And not only in terms of design, because sometimes our direct clients forget about the benefit of the people that will actually occupy their buildings. I mean it in a bit extreme way, of course. Right. So we tend to bring the users in and the benefit to the users, and so the benefit of the environment, of course, but also in the process of then managing and operating that building, which is a culture that is not present, which if in a business sense doesn't really make a huge impact, I think it will make a huge impact in terms of transforming the way we use those buildings, because that's the area where most environmental impact occurs. And the areas where if the design we produce is not realized, also the users will not get that benefit. And as a larger community as a whole, we also host courses, and we host people from university, they're doing their final year thesis, so as to a mutual exchange. But also we hope that these people then go out and then even go to other companies and bring this this thought more widespread.
That's great. That last one, I'd like to extend a little further, because the core idea of regeneration also is not that you just do things, but you build capability of yourself and others as you work. People become better critical thinkers. They have more personal mastery, better, you know, growth of the ability to manage their state of being. And that if we aren't doing that, we can't build the capacity for regeneration. And often businesses who are doing good things make sure what they do is good and the people get it, but the people aren't any smarter, more able in any way when they're done. I can hear that a bit in your graduate students. I'd love to know more about how you do that within your company, and then how you make sure that the capability of those you touch is better, not just a better building, but the people who are, as you said, going to be using or occupying a building or engaging with it. How do you help them be smarter and more able? Can you speak to that a bit?
Yes. This is actually the most inspiring goal out of that is my personal role within the company. I've seen it many times in projects where the lack of sharing of beliefs, of principles and goals for that single project, and the lack of common understanding of these goals can lead to even design team that don't really work as we would like them to work. So as a single organism, we always compare not only the building as a human being with all these different systems, but also the design team should actually function as an organism. So, and this is because normally, you know, specialists tend to remain in their own specialism. And it is very deep. There's always that resistance to change and the fear of going beyond what is known, particularly for engineers. And changing that state of mind by starting before the design is made with some sort of team build, if we call it team building, is really team sharing. Okay. Enables a very different process for which people go beyond and overcome that fear and actually feel more purposely involved into that design and are more open to innovative thinking and producing a more innovative design. It doesn't necessarily need to be high tech, but it's probably a lot better to be high knowledge with a much better impact on both the well-being of the users and environmental impact of the building. Now, this requires, of course, a really change in the state of mind of that single project group, but it requires more a change of mind within the company.
Right.
Because clearly, this introduces risks to the design we make, and really introduces a very different culture to maybe what is out there. That is, it needs to be a non-blame culture. Making mistakes is okay. And ensuring that you look at things in a different way is very important. So this is the culture that we're trying to build, exchanging information, trying to approach the design in a more mutual and open mind with respect to maybe what would be a normal design process. And of course, it's very difficult, particularly with engineers. But on the other hand, it's very inspiring. And once somebody gets it, somebody really changes and is transformed, is much more inspired. It feels more more fulfilled and happier to do that work. And this is very, very rewarding. And we see that is also contagious. It's contagious through our customers, contagious through other designers, and it's contagious within the company too.
Well, your energy and passion for what you do and how you do it is contagious. I just greatly enjoyed talking with you. I think that is probably enough for today. I look forward to meeting you. You will be out here in Seattle?
I will be, yes.
I'm so looking forward to meeting you. And then I look forward maybe next spring to show up in Italy and have a glass of wine and tour that amazing museum. So thank you for taking the time so much, Fabio.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much for joining us today and listening to another great story of a small business which is in pursuit of the regenerative business paradigm. Most of the people that you hear here were a part of the Regenerative Business Prize that was sponsored by the Regenerative Business Summit, and they were an honoree in one of six business streams. This is a production of Carol Sanford Institute. If you would like to know more about the regenerative business paradigm and read materials which could explain the seven first principles, you can go to our website at carolsanfordinstitute.com. You can find papers and blogs, and you can also go to the Regenerative Business Summit website where you can learn more about getting an invitation to join us in an active conversation. Thank you very much and see you next time.